Hi, I'm Garth Ennis, and you need to be listening to Drinking with Comics.
Thank you, sir.
No worries.
Hello, and welcome to Drinking with Comics. I'm Sean, this is Chris, that's Mike and Jordan, and tonight our special guest, this is Kristen Renee Gorlitz, and she is the creator and writer of a comic called The Empties that we're going to tell you about. So, welcome, Kristen.
Thank you.
Sean. Kirsten is running the cameras, and we have a live studio audience. And real quick, because Mike made me swear I would do this, and I'm going to do it anyway. So in the audience, we have a special friend. Joe Dot Baxter is with us. He used to film the show. And don't look at me like that, because Mike said that you already okayed this. So I just want to say...
And he's being arrested. I don't know if you can hear the siren.
So Joe is here, and we love Joe, and... Joe is moving to New York, so we're going to take the show to New York in a couple months. So, Joe, I know you didn't know this yet, but we're going to show up in January.
We can't quit you, Joe.
Now, I've never been to the Windy Apple, but I'm looking forward to it.
The Windy Apple. So, but anyway, so thank you, everyone, for coming. We just did the first annual Drinking with Trivia. That went fairly well.
It went the annual thing?
And Joe won.
It went.
We fixed it. He's leaving. He actually didn't win. He didn't get anything.
You, I won.
Mm. You did. So, everybody, let's talk about Kristen's comic, The Empties.
Yay!
So, right now, there is a Kickstarter that you have going, and it's live. How many days more is it live for?
20.
20?
Yeah,
20 more days.
About 20 days.
So, tell us about what you're kickstarting. Tell us about how you came up with the comic. Just tell us all about the comic.
Sure. So, well, the story, it's called The Empties, and it's a relationship horror story. So, I had been through a couple of those horrific relationships, and
aren't
I drew...
All?
Yeah, I know, right?
No, boyfriend's
no,
right there,
I'm about it? To get married, so...
Oh, that's your fiancé, yeah, all right.
So, all of this horror goes right into the comic, of course.
But you're not going to get married unless your Kickstarter, like, funds, right?
Yeah, it's a desperate situation.
Yeah.
The second one is the one that we're crowdfunding. So I have a cover that is completed, but we will need funds to actually print the second issue and have all the details correct on that one. So that's what we're funding, trying to get funds to print the second issue of the comic book and then just help the fees of paying my artists and keep the series going. So there will be about 6 books in the series.
Yeah. 6 books in the series. So your artist is Eli Powell?
Yes, Eli
and
Powell.
How did you find him?
I found him through word of mouth. I had been working with someone who had been a story editor for Marvel on comics like Old Man Logan. And he came on board early on the project and helped to give me some direction and kind of learn what things were. I'm calling these things shots and stuff because I come from movies and I'm like, okay, it's a panel. We lay it out on a page. Okay, I'm making sense here. So he helped kind of walk me through the ropes of comics and he gave me word of mouth recommendation for Eli, who was actually the first person I was like, yes, hire this guy. I want him. He's horror. I haven't seen other artists like him, but let's get him. And then it took some back and forth and more of an artist search, but I approached Eli at a better time, and he was like, yeah, let's do this.
That's awesome.
Where does he live?
He's in Chicago right now.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So. Eli, I'm doing an episode in Chicago next month. So.
Oh, crazy.
You know, I mean, probably
yeah,
not
you got to bring him on. Yeah. Something I don't.
What inspired you to
to
make comics? That you're from film, but what?
I'm from film, and I wanted to make some progress with this story. And comic books is the most amazing medium that I've found because I'm a control freak, right? So I want like every image specifically laid out how I want it to be, and you have even more control over an image with a comic book than you even do with film because you're bound by
images,
a budget.
Yeah.
I can draw anything on the page and it doesn't cost more, it just takes more time to get it finessed exactly the way you want it. So I was like, this is a perfect medium for me to kind of tell the story, and it's an end in itself. Like, if it never goes beyond a comic book, I am trying to make a movie, but if it doesn't go beyond this comic book series, I'll be happy still with it because it's kind of worked it out and now people can actually get into the story.
Is this your first comic book?
It is my first comic book, yeah.
How's it going?
It's great. I love it. I don't know if I haven't I don't know if I fit in comic book world or if I'm breaking rules or not.
Well, it's good to break rules.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm kosher on the comic book rules and stuff, but I think it's turning out really well. Yeah.
I think it looks great. Like I mentioned earlier, it has a bit of a... Your artist has a bit of a Kevin... It reminds me of the April O'Neil from 1986.
Oh, yeah! Oh, my God. Yes, it does. The hair.
I mean, she looks just like her.
The curly hair came from... I was watching Steve Martin's The Jerk, and Bernadette Peters has this crazy, amazing curly hair. And so this was the first time we were drawing Helen, and we were about to do her with the normal, you know... flat, straightened hair with a bit of a wave, and I was like, no, let's do this 80s perm, and yeah, Paul hates it. He hates the hairstyle.
Is that Paul? Or?
Yeah, my fiancé hates the big curly hair, and I'm like, yes, let's bring it back. I want to see more of this.
I can smell the hairspray.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. And there's a menu in the back here, too.
Yeah, well,
oh, no. I see.
Yes, it is. The menu is part of the credits, and it also ties in my main character, Derek. He's a chef, and one of the things he does is take junk food and transforms it into gourmet kind of meals. So he uses gummy bears and candy and that kind of thing and makes creative dishes out of it. And it then becomes kind of a theme throughout, so I use gummy bears on the cover to kind of represent the state of mind and... physical state that the characters are in.
There's a great bit, I forget which one it's in, but where it's like they're actually making the gummy bears like
talk to each other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the scenes that I had written early on for my screenplay, and it really stuck and stood out as I even developed and changed other things. But what I have is Derek is kind of play acting his feelings with his he's going through some rough times with his wife, finds out that she's cheating on him, and he's just irate. And so he works out some of these things when he goes into the kitchen and he starts play acting with gummy bears, and they talk to each other. It's kind of funny, but you see what he's thinking too. So,
nice. That's a nice little sort of device.
Yeah, definitely.
It works.
It's a very cinematic comic, and I feel like that in itself, I could immediately see it as almost like the stop motion, like in I was watching it in a film, you know.
Yeah.
It's something about it reminds me. There's like a Coen Brothers vibe in a way.
Cool.
I'm not exactly sure like where that came from, but I mean,
I love Blood Simple.
That's the one. There's something about it that reminds me of Blood Simple. I don't know what exactly it is.
Well, maybe a relationship horror. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty a terrifying relationship
in that movie.
I mean, the cliffhanger in issue one and how it pays off in the beginning of issue two alone, I thought was really cool.
Thanks.
And,
I tried to leave it and break it on a bunch of cliffhangers, so I think I have one for every issue.
For all six issues?
Yeah.
Nice.
That's very good. What I was going to go for before, you have like a catchphrase. It's like, what is it? Like a bad romance will eat you alive?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Nothing eats you alive like a bad romance.
Yeah, and and it's just a great, you know. And I love the idea of kind of the juxtaposition of the zombie. I don't necessarily know that it is a zombie, but it's at least a zombie animal, in the zombie field.
I have a kind of different approach to it because in The Empties, it's the person and the wife in the story gets sick and she transforms into a brain dead kind of zombie by the end of it. But it's kind of watching her deterioration for the first two acts and all of the things that brings up, like, you know, the fear of losing yourself, but then also on the husband's side of things, fear of losing someone he loves, even though maybe it's not the best relationship to be in. So yeah, it's got a zombie element for sure, but I just thought that zombies have been... worked out a lot with the social commentary that the humans are the real monsters and zombies are just the, you know, symbol for our inevitable death, or we've got some great zombie social commentaries like Romero's Dawn of the Dead with consumerism and stuff, but we've got a lot of social commentary. I wanted this to be about how people can be both monsters and genuinely great. Like, we have the ability to do great things and horrible things And especially when you're in a relationship, you get both sides of a person.
Yeah,
it's not
definitely.
Just like always one or the other.
Good people do terrible things. And yeah. It doesn't necessarily, I mean, sometimes then you're left with this thing like, the fact that you did this or I did this, does this make me a terrible person, or is there a way to come back from that?
So I really like the complexity of people and their flaws, and so I highlight those flaws throughout the story. And that's one of the main things, is I really wanted to be fair to people who are who make mistakes but are doing things that are trying to help themselves. And
so if people want to read the first issue, you can go to, is it theempties.com?
Empties comics.com. And right now you can get a great deal on the comics, especially the digital copies, on the horrorcomicbook.com. that'll take you to my Kickstarter for The Empties, and you can get a digital copy of the first issue for $1, so you can catch up. $5 for both the first and second issue, and if we get funded, hopefully I can tack on a digital copy of the third issue, which we're working on finishing up right now.
Cool.
So,
where is the Kickstarter? I believe you made your goal, right?
The first one, we raised our goal, so that's I was able to print out a lot of copies of the first issue and sell, and I've been selling those and fulfilling the Kickstarter. This one is for the second issue, so that we can print enough copies of the second issue. So yeah, it's another one, and it's in progress. It looks like we're on track to meet our goal, but we need help. So yeah, check it out at horrorcomicbook.com.
Definitely, it's definitely worth checking out. It's worth funding, I think. I mean, I as independent horror comics go, it's one of my favorites in a while.
Awesome. Thank you.
I like, especially with zombies, you know, I've probably said this before on here, going back to, like, I think 2004 or 5, when I still lived in Chicago, my Chicago comic shop, Amazing Fantasy, and my friend Mike that runs it, who is like...
Not me, the other Mike.
He's your age, your birthdays are within, like, 10 days. I mean, it's just... uncanny.
Your twin.
Yeah. The what do they call it? Stranger Things. The
upside down.
The upside down.
Mike. Chicago's kind of an upside down. But he would always be like, oh, read The Walking Dead. Read The Walking Dead. And it was within the first like year and a half of, and I was like, I'm not interested. I like the first three Romero movies, and Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. And other than that, obvious shit is just overdone. And I thought that back then. And now, obviously, I mean, you know,
we've seen a lot of them. It's just getting tired.
It's so huge. But the thing about the Romero ones that I always loved is they're not about the fucking zombies.
Yeah.
They're about the people. You know, I will defend Day of the Dead even.
I love Day of the Dead.
Because, like, one of the most insane images to me that really captures all of the Romero stuff is, like, putting X's on the calendar. Because it's like, yeah, I'm alive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What does that even mean? I'm in a bunker I can't leave. Like, these are the only people I know that are left. I should be terrified if I meet anybody else.
Yeah.
And so, to me, the zombie thing was always about the people. It's what the Walking Dead comic book does so well.
It does. Yeah.
So well that the show just, you know, shifts.
Yeah, I've only read the comic, and it's just so perfectly crafted, too.
It's like this week another one
came
out. I'm like, God damn, it's still amazing.
Yeah.
So thank you, Mike in Chicago, for getting me to read it back then.
There you go.
You know, it's been my favorite comic ever since.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, and the Empties definitely, and it doesn't even feel like a zombie book. It feels like a horror book, definitely.
Yeah.
And part of that is definitely Eli's art.
Yeah.
Like there's just, it's, and it takes place in Michigan?
Yes. Well, I'm from Michigan.
And
so
it captures the cold in the winter. I mean, it captures it.
Yeah. We're from in Michigan.
I'm from Grand Rapids. I'm actually, that's where I'm flying tonight.
That's where you're headed.
This.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
So, and nice. It's snowing there.
Have you been there, sir?
Yes.
Is he from Grand Rapids, too?
No, he's from L.A., so he had to take the horrible
trip. Now, is this
trip.
The first time you're going?
No,
he's not going this time.
Oh, okay.
He's
gone. Have you been for winter?
Once.
Okay, what do you think?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Rather burn up in a blazing flame in California than freeze your
possible.
Balls off
Please.
In Michigan, right?
What you wish
Please.
For, my friend.
Yes.
Kirsten is L.A. born, and we go to Chicago. I've always gone in October because it's perfect, right?
Yeah.
And my sister's boyfriend convinced her that she wants to see winter, like, last year when we were there. And I'm like, okay. So I had to go back for a funeral last winter. It was the first time I saw winter in 12 years or 11 years. And I was like, you know, it's not...
Wasn't your sister's boyfriend's funeral, was it?
No.
Okay.
And I was like, it's not that bad. To which my father was like, yeah, because you're fucking leaving. but so we're going to go in a couple weeks, and and it's going to be her first winter, and I'm hoping we get snow, and I'm, you know.
Chicago.
You know, you always go to Big Bear, right?
The wind.
Yeah.
The
wind.
Just go to Big Bear, dude.
Like, no. I've been to Big Bear twice, and it snowed the day after I left.
It's not winter if you can leave it behind, although I say that knowing I'm going to fly away.
Sorry.
Anyway,
well, you'll figure out how terrifying this snow is if you get to encounter it, but it'll probably still be very cold there in Chicago.
I mean, snow is scary.
For some reason, I'm just picturing her going to be all bundled up like the kid in Christmas Story who can't put his arms down.
That's exactly what I'm picturing.
Going to have to like walk in the door sideways.
I can't wait. But there is something about, you know, the Midwest and winter, and night comes earlier. Excuse me, and just the cold and kind of the barrenness. Not all the trees are barren, but even when you're in an urban landscape, you know, like there was a night when I was there last year in the winter where I drove into the city from the suburbs, and there was nobody because it had just snowed, right? And it's weird. I love it, and you don't get that here, obviously. But there is, it's a perfect setting for this, and then the fact that. Is so far in the first two installments, it's taking place primarily in this house, right?
Yeah.
And that adds to like a claustrophobia as well. Like all this bad shit's happening in this house, and it's night and it's winter, and it's just.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, the winter is a very specific and necessary part of the story. Like this couldn't take place in a house in LA because the element is something that kind of traps them in the house. His wife has gotten sick, and so they've. In various, some hilarious ways and some not hilarious ways, fucked up their cars, if I'm able to say that. This
we'll
is
say
full
worse.
Full of terrible language. It's for adults, you know.
You can't say that shit on here,
okay.
Man.
Watch your mouth.
But
I just read them both, and I really like them.
Oh, awesome. Aww. Thank you. So, yeah, the snow is what kind of keeps them isolated in the home because you can't stay out in the cold long enough to find another person driving by. They, of course, live out in the country, but they are within walking distance of the next house. It's just probably a 2-mile walk. And with the snow and with a sick person, you're just not able to make that trek or leave her at home knowing that she's okay enough to get there. So it kind of traps them looking for other ways to survive.
And that's kind of what I enjoyed with it, too, is that, it did that kind of atmosphere reminds me of the thing.
Yeah,
you know, where you're stuck in this kind of compound area, and there's just nowhere to go. There is stuff out there, but no way to get to it.
It becomes less feasible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have films done out there at all?
I do. I have a lot of short films done, but this is my attempt to, one, show my story cinematically, as you said, and kind of get specifically the images that I want. And I think I would do a comic book for every potential movie that I do from now on.
Oh, really?
Because it's just such a wonderful medium to have one separately. I don't look at this as like a storyboard. As you see, I do a lot of verticals instead of horizontals. And if I were just doing this as a storyboard, I would just horizontal, 16 by 9 shots.
Yeah.
It'd just be so boring. It'd just be a storyboard that I'd be like,
so you understand the craft of comic book.
And I
writing.
Think that the comic book, you know, it needs to stand on its own and flow page to page. But I think comics are just the perfect medium to take your idea and streamline it, get the script really tight. You can't have things that you can in movies you can get away with, like just people talking. But in a comic book, you want to show things better. So it's even more like a medium that's in love with images. And that's kind of weird to say because movies should be mostly about images. But I think comics really take images to the next level and help you see and read through the story.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's so awesome. You prefer this medium over film?
No, I'm a film person. No, oh, okay. I can't.
It sounds like you did.
I would love to do every one of my stories in the comic book world because it helps you really understand a film. It helps you work better on a visual way instead of just relying on some cheap things where you could do like a dinner table scene on a film. And you can do the coverage, you'd have a two shot, and then you'd do coverage, cross coverage, and just the actors talking and performing. If you were to try to put that in a comic book scene, you'd realize that you could do that better, like with better images that you haven't seen before. You might have to take it into some different setting, but you'd be able to capture the essence of a scene visually instead of just through a performance kind of
medium.
That's
really interesting.
Yeah. So the comic book helps you really focus on the images, and then if you translate that back to film, you're going to have a much stronger scene because you don't just need to have an actor doing a strong performance. You need to have an actor giving a strong performance in a really cool visual setting.
Wow.
Mind blown.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
So that's what I've learned.
You put Gerald to sleep. That's okay. He sleeps a lot.
I really like the comic. And I mean, I know that you're pursuing it as a film. So I hope that that happens. But now I hope even more. Like, wow. That's
it's
awesome.
Helped make it a lot better. I've been able to cut scenes from the movie. Capturing action in a still image is another challenge too. With movies, you have cheats. Like, I was looking for great action shots in movies, and I'd be like, pause on some Jason Statham film, and it's like, I can't take any single frame of this story and have motion. You can't. It's all editing and camera movement. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a cheat. You, just cheated your action scene all the way with just, like, kinetic movement of editing. But for a comic book, you have to kind of have action captured on just a single image. And so,
perspective.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to do, and a lot cooler when you can get it right, and that will help you translate back to a film where you don't have to rely on just editing or something. So that's for me what comic books have helped me.
Did you have any training in comics? Did you read Understanding Comics? No, or you just jumped in and did it?
Just jumped in and did it.
Cool.
No.
And you found your artist
knowledge. Word of mouth, like I said, I had hired someone who had done story editing for Marvel to help me kind of go through the ropes and learn, like, what I'm talking about, and he recommended the guy, but he wasn't available immediately, so I did do a long search for artists online and commissioned a bunch of test pages to see what they could bring to it.
Right.
Found people who were really good, like, with faces, which this is a story about two people. Primarily, so I was like, this would be awesome. This person's good at faces, but they had no horror experience. And also, I found people who were good at, like, you know, superhero action and that kind of thing, but it just wasn't this fit. So I was like, man, I really need Eli. He's the only person I found who's just, like, straight horror.
Yeah.
Like, I can show this third page here, he just kind of very gory, but really gets the body horror that I love.
And there's, I know you're a Cronenberg fan. So,
huge Cronenberg fan, so he's influenced me.
Element, which there should be with a zombie story,
right?
Especially something that's kind of happening slowly and you're seeing other people, like, realizing it's happening.
Yeah.
The other two people involved, Marshall Dillon and Alexander Garcia. So I just want to give props to everybody.
Oh, of course.
And so if there's anybody
else,
please.
Yeah, there are
a few
more. Yeah. Marshall, he does all the letters, and he's been in the comic world forever, and I'm very, very lucky because I've always been a person who's, again, I said I'm a detail person. Well, I'm a detail person down to the fonts. Like, I'm like, oh, I need a specific font, or this is, it's over. You know, you got to find the right thing. And Marshall, he just knows comic book language and can switch fonts. Like, I thought this was very creative. When we go into this gummy bear thing, he's got a much more, like, cartoony cursive font that is different from the way that they normally talk, because this is actually, like, inside our character's head, kind of play acting with gummy bears. And so Marshall's really great at just figuring out what fonts and how to convey the text on the page, and I think that brings this to life completely. I'm fortunate to work with him because he's a big fan of Eli. So
he'll
do all of Eli's books. So I'm like, that is amazing.
That's cool.
Alex is a producer, a friend of mine, so he helped me kind of put together the ideas, and he's the one who really championed for the gummy bear covers, because I was like, well, this is a horror thing, and it's in a house, so, right, it should just have a cover of a house and all that creepy stuff, which you see in horror tropes all the time. Movie posters are a house, or a hand, or a screaming woman, or something. There are the tropes. A house would work well for this, but gummy bears is kind of like, what on earth is this?
What also too
What's
is,
going
you know,
on?
So if you ever do a booth at a show, you're gonna have like a bowl of gummy bears.
But
they have to be the Haribo sugar-free gummy bears.
Oh yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, that's just mean. Oh, you're not gonna bite? Here, have some gummy bears.
Here,
oh, you are here.
Ones.
Have these ones.
Yeah. Nice.
Have the good gummy bears or
now,
the not good ones.
Now I like the kind of little. Double play in there too, because essentially you look at the gummy bears and they're translucent, so inside they are empty.
Yeah, that's true. And the sickness that the people get, I did say it turns you into like a brainless zombie, but it turns them gummy in the process, so their body changes. Mm-hmm. If they eat something, you can see it like shape through their body, and there are weird contortions and that kind of thing that happens, so they become almost more jelly, gummy-like towards the end. So it just kind of plays more and more. gets more twisted.
So now with this, how much story do you have plotted out for it? Is this going to be like an ongoing series? Is it going to be a limited series where you already know your start and your end?
Right? Yeah, it's a limited series. I have 6 issues planned, start to finish, and all of those screenplays are written. I kind of change them throughout the process. Like, Eli and I work on 2 to 4 pages at a time, and I kind of like go through those pages while he's working on that, or right before he works on them, to kind of then figure out the images and if they're still right for the comic book, because I did adapt it from the screenplay, so I have to just make sure that the pages are working, the pace is still like exciting enough to keep you turning the page. But yeah, I have 6 planned, and then there is a potential sequel. So I could expand it definitely by following one of the main characters, and kind of taking it in the more scientific approach on how this whole thing started, because we don't get a good look at why everyone's getting sick. We just have an apocalypse scenario. Yeah.
That's cool. You're saying so potential sequel,
but you know why
really
they are.
Kind of takes it from this more personal story to a larger.
Yeah, we can take it to the larger world and why people are turning sick, and maybe if they can, you know, prevent the disease, that kind of thing. They'll be studying the people who are sick.
Kickstart this, people, because I want the comics, but I want the movie, I want the subsequent TV series. I want
a bag of Swedish fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the Kickstarter?
If you go to horrorcomicbook.com. It should forward to Kickstarter, or just look at the empties on Kickstarter. There will be one for my first one, and the second one is live. So,
what's your experience been making comics and getting out there and stuff?
Yeah, I love it, and I've been learning a lot about marketing, having to do these Kickstarter campaigns and promote the material. So it's been just a nonstop learning process. Like, I'm new to comics, I knew movies, and that has helped a lot. It's an easier transition even from movies to comics for me than it is from movies to like theater. I would never try that. Movies to books. I could never write a book, you know. I care too much
Your
about
visual.
The images.
Yeah.
So that's try to change things up, but I'm just experimenting and playing around with it. I hope it continues to work. It gives me some anxiety at night as I'm like, can I transition from one scene to the next on the same page? I had never done that. I was just like, okay, new page, new scene. We're in a different spot in the house, at least.
That's
funny.
I had a similar anxiety.
I'm like, can we lay it out and transition that way? I don't know. It's easier to transition on a flip or on at least another page. It feels like edit at least, but if you're doing, I was like, lay out the top of the page and the second bottom half is going to be in a different setting. We're just going to do it. I think it'll work.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I've never read Understanding Comics, and the reason I've never read it is because I kind of don't want to know, because it's such a magical thing to me, you know? Like, I've often said, I don't always pay attention to art, because to me, the art sometimes is just like the story. So it's like I'm not even seeing the art. It's just telling me that Jim walks in, picks up the bottle, and hits him.
Yeah.
You know? So people have always been surprised, like, you know, when they bring up Understanding Comics. Who wrote that?
Scott McCloud.
Yeah. And it's,
I've never read it either, by the way.
It's so, you know, important to so many people, and just heralded as this amazing thing, as I'm sure that it is. But now that I'm, like, you know, getting into writing, and I'm thinking about, like, I don't even know how I read them. I just read them. I consume them in a way where I'm not even conscious of, when you turn the page, then the next scene's, like, I started going back through, you know, like, Preacher was the first one where I'm like, let me see how that's laid out. And you know, just getting some idea. But you do you do a really good job. There was never a point, and it's funny. I read a comic recently, which will remain nameless. It's like a Image comic, but I was very aware I was reading a comic, which I kind of feel like it made me like it less. Where, you know, when I read The Walking Dead, I'm not aware I'm reading. It's like I go into this place for 20 something pages, and I come out, I'm like, holy fuck, and that's it. Like
engrossing.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Yeah, we have a similar book for screenplay writing, Save the Cat.
And yeah, yeah.
Like everyone has to read that to know the way to write movies and everything. And I feel like there's a freedom. It's good to know the rules, but for me, not knowing the rules in comics has been really freeing so that I can play with something that I think is right and kind of work it out on the page. And I don't know, I don't like when you have everything kind of set in stone. I think movies have been getting more and more boring because they're not taking the same risks. We're like, we have the formula now, we can teach it. You know how to write a movie. It has to be this and this and this. And you're not learning just like the idea that it should be a beat coming and happening at this page. You're like, it's the law. There has to be something that changes here at this, and you have to mathematically add it up. And it's not as fluid then, and not as open to what is great about movies is the spontaneity. You can work and work and work until you actually capture a moment, a performance that feels alive in a camera, a shot that feels alive. That's what's so great about movies. And when you just write a formula, you end up kind of just shooting a formula and not playing around and experimenting.
Right, and it can still be an engaging experience. Yeah. But, you know, and I know you saw this, so I'll bring it up briefly, but in trying to unpack the new Suspiria movie, I realize, like, one of the sad things about movies now is, and I like genre movies, and I like some blockbusters or whatever, but in trying to explain Suspiria to people, the new one, I find that at first I was like, oh, well, it's an art film more than a horror film. And I was like, but it's not an art film. But I go back and, like, so in the 60s, in the late 60s and 70s, when the auteur director thing kind of came in, like, there were no blockbusters. Blockbusters were movies that were fucking awesome cinema, like Chinatown or Rosemary's Baby, right? And they didn't follow a blockbuster, like, Save the Cat formula. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's actually not as easy to do a formulaic movie as one would necessarily
think. It's not that easy, no.
But I felt like, oh my God, like, what does it say about us now as movie consumers that, like, Suspiria is basically, like, to explain it, it's like, it's an art film.
But yeah, it's like, yeah. It's got some foreign language in there, and it's really risky, and it does things that you have no idea what's happening. You cannot predict the end.
There's no formula there.
And so, yeah, you have to say it's an art film, but that's lame. If it were TV, it would just be one of those out there, cool, experimenting television shows. So, I don't know, I don't like that movies are so taught. now because they're not taking the risks. And Suspiria was just, I can't believe it. I was so upset that they were remaking that movie, like, so upset. I'm like, Dario Argento's not even involved. How can you remake a masterpiece of cinema?
It's just not a remake.
It's amazing.
It's just not a remake.
It's so good.
I still don't even know how I feel about it because I need to see it again.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I know that it was an amazingly made movie.
It's incredible.
Just not the same movie.
And it's not, but it takes enough.
No, that's a good thing. Yeah. Like, that's what I wanted. You don't want a shot-for-shot recreation. Way more, like, I pictured that it was going to have no resemblance whatsoever. Yeah. And they actually, there was a little bit, like, character names and stuff. I'm like, oh, they kept that. Weird.
Huh. Yeah, but it really keeps some of the spirit and core of Suspiria, but it totally translated it almost like it was a different art form.
Yeah.
Like, you never get that where one movie translates a movie to something new, but it kept the spirit of the movie. But Suspiria, for I think the first time in cinema history, we have Yojimbo and Fistful of Dollars, but that's not a straight remake.
That's a great pull.
But this is pretty much that.
But that's the same
thing.
This is
like, it took the essence of it and it did its own story, and I can't believe it did it so well.
Was the soundtrack good?
Yeah,
You know what?
My one problem with it. It's good.
Ending scene, which is amazing, but the music playing over it has his voice, like singing.
That's a little weird.
And I really didn't, you know. So
It
takes you out of it. Like when Morgan Freeman shows up in The Dark Knight. It totally pulls me, like, I'm watching a movie, because nothing against Morgan Freeman, his voice cues me that I'm watching a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tom York's voice being there, I was like, that's kind of, it kind of pissed me off a little bit. The scene was so visually amazing that I was able to just, like, okay,
shut up, Sean, just
deal with it. But that was one problem.
His music pissed me off at the beginning, because I'm like, oh, not more Radiohead.
Yeah.
And they were my favorite back in high school, but they aged a little bit where I was like,
can you
just
put
have a
peanut butter
humor
on your spaghetti, you know
I
what
was
I mean?
Like, just have a little humorous
thing.
Well
said.
That's true.
So,
but it's actually really good music and not at all like Goblin.
No,
of
I mean,
course,
but it's just,
very
yeah.
perfect for the new movie.
It is. It really was.
So.
Can we? You guys want to talk about a couple of comics we got on the stand?
Want to? Yeah, sure.
What do you guys want to talk about first?
I only read the Magic one and the Blackbird.
All right, let's talk about Blackbird.
Blackbird.
Okay.
So
check it out.
Yeah.
This is interesting. So Gerald recommended. I saw number one come out. I looked at it, and I'm in this thing where I'm like, there's so many books right now. I'm trying to like taper down what I'm reading, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna pass. I was in here the other day. Gerald's like, it's really good, you should read it. I was like, And then me and Chris get together a couple days ago, Chris and I, and he's like, oh, you know, we do the pre-show thing. He's like, here, read this one. I read it, I liked it. And I fucking loved it. Now, I come in here the next day, and Elizabeth that works here, it was so funny, she's like, yeah, I didn't really like it. I'm like, really? And she's like, yeah, because I'm a girl, and I read a lot of stuff like this with, like, the magic and the talking cat and the blah, blah, blah.
Fuck yeah, Sailor Moon.
Okay, I don't even know what that is. I mean, I know the name of it, but
that's hilarious.
But so it's interesting. I'm really interested in that dichotomy, the fact that like as a 42-year-old male, this was totally new to me, and as like I don't know how old Elizabeth is, but as a 20-something-year-old female, she's like, whatever.
That is funny though, because yeah, you're a grown man. You've never been sold. Here's a magical girl ever in your life, and I've been nothing but sold that my entire life.
Okay, that's really
every time I swipe right on Tinder, I think it's a magical girl.
But I see where both you and Elizabeth are coming from, because in the beginning, I'm like, I can point to almost any panel and be like, I've seen that in this.
See, that's
so many
fascinating
times
to me. And
but
like,
towards the end, it won me over a little bit more, but I'm not a fuck-up, so I don't relate to fuck-ups at all.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Keep telling yourself that,
but fuck-ups make for good stories, in my opinion. And, like I also, like, it's really visual and pretty. Like, they have their tone down. I mean, it...
That's true.
It reminds me a lot of The Wicked and the Divine.
Definitely. Yeah. Somebody pointed out there's, like, a Riverdale element, which I don't watch Riverdale, but...
That's
like,
interesting.
I know they have this like neon noir kind of thing for Riverdale that makes me want to watch
it. Yeah, they do.
And so this kind of has that too. But I mean, I'd never seen anything like this before. And I
there's a little Mandy Peppered in there.
Definitely. Which, if you haven't seen Mandy, just go fucking buy it and then just watch it on your knees in a prayer position, because it's like amazing. It's basically like two sisters, and it starts right before when they're a little bit younger. I forget if there's an actual year. I don't think there is.
I think this qualifies for a touch it and feel.
It's about 10 years.
Sort of. I feel like they based it off like the 90s earthquake that was really
bad. That's what I was thinking. 94?
94. Yeah. I was 3 years old. It interrupted so my mom thought I was jumping on the bed.
Dude, that totally fucks me up, because I was like watching the World Series when that happened. I was like, what are you. But so there's this earthquake, but during the earthquake, the one sister sees this, like, giant, like, magical cat thing, like, wrecking shit, and nobody else sees it. And then she's obsessed with this idea from fiction of, like, Paragons?
Is that it? Paragons, weird.
And, like, magicians. And then she gets, like, pulled into this weird Grand Oasis diner, and it seems like it's some kind of, like, otherworldly way station, but like none of this, it's all so transient that like it happens and you don't get, you're like, oh, well, wait, what was that? And so they kind of are doling this out very slowly. And then meanwhile, in the real world, she's growing up and she's kind of addicted to pain pills, and her family's kind of fucked up. Her mom dies in an earthquake and her dad's a drunk.
No. Her parents started fighting a shit ton, and then the mom, like, I think dies, she was arguing crash. With the
oh,
dad,
you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah. And so then it's just her and her sister. But the thing that I loved is so that the main character really, really, she's seen this stuff and she's like, oh my God, all this stuff I love from fiction is real and I want this. So then, you know, when we go from the 10 years before to the 10 years later, and at some point this giant cat thing reappears and it takes her sister. Yeah. And her response is like, no, take me.
I'm the one
that believes in this. And so there's this whole element of, like, the disappointment that, like...
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
She's been waiting for this for the last 10 years.
I'm pretty sure the mom is the thing that made everyone forget that the earthquake even happened, though.
Oh.
Cause
you have been sold this your whole life.
I haven't been sold this my whole life.
All right, well, Sam Humphries and Jen Bartel, I mean...
Spoiler alert.
Well, that's why she suddenly finds this thing, and she's like, oh, if I put this here, and oh, I can see it. I'm special.
If you're interested.
But it's... I'm not
Thank
saying
you.
It's bad.
Makes the flight go
quicker.
No, I'm incredibly good at guessing stuff. Yes. So.
Fair enough. Dead Rabbit?
Yeah.
So Dead Rabbit, it's Jerry Dugan, right?
Jerry Dugan, yep.
And John McCrae, who did Hitman with Garth Ennis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused though with Jimmy Dugan, the spectacular coach for the Rockford
Beaches. Jerry's a friend of the comic bug. He's been here a few times, actually.
I keep thinking of Dum Dum Dugan. Isn't he one of Nick Fury's Howling
Commandos?
Yeah, he is. Jerry Dugan wrote Deadpool.
Deadpool for a long time.
He's been here several times.
So, basically, was it 20 years ago? Something like that?
It's like late 90s.
Yeah, so 15, 20 years ago. In Boston, there was this kind of like a vigilante criminal called the Dead Rabbit. And I'm going to say he's a vigilante criminal because he would go around kind of beating up and stealing from criminals, you know, mob bosses, things like that. But then again, he'll turn around and then he'll go rob a bank.
Yeah.
So he's just kind of hitting everybody. And it's it kind of starts off with a news report saying that it's been, you know, X amount of years since the last reported, sighting of the Dead Rabbit.
Well, it's like the 20th anniversary, right, of the last time.
And at some point, he's kind of become this kind of, I don't want to say a folk hero, but he's just become kind of endeared to the Boston area. Yeah. And then, meanwhile, we see what he's really been up to. You know, everyone's saying
just
that
standing up to wipe his ass because of his hemorrhoids.
Which is exactly.
reminded me of Airboy quite a bit. The first scene with him, he's literally standing in the bathroom wiping his ass.
Yeah, you know, exactly. You know, and over the years, the media, they've kind of exaggerated his story. You know, after his last big score of $12 million, and they're kind of like, well, wasn't it $10 million last year and $8 million the year before that, and so on. So they think, you know, was he killed? Did he retire? You know, where's he been? What happened to him? And meanwhile, he has become a greeter of a Walmart-type establishment.
And he has hemorrhoids.
And he has hemorrhoids.
I turned right to that page.
So,
Sure, thanks.
It's interesting in that he's become a greeter, but so the thing is, he never, so what you learn later is he's credited with his last heist had to do with a mob boss. And it was like, you know, this is the one they say 8 million, 10 million, 12 million or whatever. And at some point they cut to the mob and they're like, you know, oh, they're doing another show story on this fucking asshole, blah, 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 blah. And they're showing you he doesn't have this money. Like, he lives in a home. His wife is sick and dying, basically. He's used up everything he stole. So he went out, wanted to get back in the game. He goes to case a Walmart.
Yeah.
And realizes nobody fucking pays cash anymore. I can't rob this place. So he literally gets a job greeting.
Yeah.
Because he's like, well, okay, well, I need money. So he leaves every day. His wife thinks he's going to play golf. He goes to Walmart, and he's a greeter. And then what gets him back into it is totally fucked up.
Yeah, he catches, or he notices a guy coming in, basically buying all of the ingredients to get rid of a dead body. He's buying, you know, basically you would...
Count Chocula, some milk.
Drano, saws, pliers, you know, chemical gas respirator. Mask. Yeah, respirator, there you go. Just basically all these things just to get rid of a body. You know, and he is no stranger to this. You know, he's, you know, noticing, like, you know, what a fucking idiot. He's buying everything all together. It's not like he's coming in and
like
getting this or getting that. He's being really obvious about it. And so the guy goes to pay cash, and he, you know, registers down. We got to use your card only. The guy gives him his card. Okay. You know, he goes, okay, now let me see your ID for the card, because he wants to see where this guy's from. But then the guy changes his mind, but not before he managed to catch the name of the guy on his card. And later on, he goes to pay him a visit that evening and dons his dead rabbit outfit again to go kind of...
Which he's been, you can tell he's been dying to do, right?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's like he didn't get to do it because he realized I can't rob Walmart, so...
Exactly,
so
exactly.
So he's raring to go for any reason.
You know, and he, you know, and it is interesting, you know, because he has... the muscle memory of everything, but he's still very rusty.
Well, and he's older.
Yes,
so he
exactly.
has the muscle memory, but the body doesn't necessarily... I can relate to this lately. It's like, the body does... It's like, oh, I know what to do, but the body's like, yeah, but we don't do that quite at the same speed you used to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Can you speak to that, Kirsten?
No.
Oh. You set it up, baby.
I know.
Speaking for me.
You can end the job.
Yeah, I will. I'm not going to protect myself.
But yeah, but very fun read. The second issue just dropped,
and
right?
it's fucking
great.
So
I haven't touched the second one yet.
Well,
so
the one thing, and I don't feel like this is a spoiler because I feel like this is going to set up the big picture. Is the fact that, like, and I think you even get it from the first issue. You realize he didn't steal that mob money. We don't know who did, but he did not. So, it's going to be interesting. So the mob is gunning for him because they think that he did. He didn't do it, and you know, it's just the second issue was even better than the first. It's fantastic, very very good book. We talk about Neil Gaiman's. I think I don't know if we've even touched on this.
I think we brought up the dream.
Oh, we did the Sandman universe. So now at this point, like we're two issues into most of these. The Dreaming was great. House of Whispers, I really liked. The one that surprised me...
I didn't like House of Whispers.
I like Voodoo. I have a thing for Voodoo. So.
Voodoo?
No. Voodoo.
You do.
But the one that surprised me, because I'm such a huge fan of the original series, and the original series is very much... There's a point to everything that happens. You don't get it. You know, I read it monthly. You didn't see it at first, but then when you start to see, oh my God, this is where it's going. It's amazing. And I know they've done... You know, it's Lucifer. They've done a TV show, which on this show, I like when I heard that it was basically Castle, and it's like, oh, Lucifer leaves hell to help the LAPD solve crimes.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck you. Now, Kirsten watches the show. I've never watched it, but I actually believe it's a good show. It's just, to me, the premise of that original series is so amazing. Like, why just do that with it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, oh, a new Lucifer book. This is going to be. I'm really in.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even tell you what the fuck happened in the first issue, but that made me, I was like, what? Well, did
you can you no, know, I read it. No, you can try it. You can try it. I want to hear what you think happened in the first issue.
I don't really know. I mean, he's obviously like, you know, really down and out. He's in some place where they're like basically like taking care of him. He's like an invalid almost. He's like mentally not stable. And then they're cutting between that and this cop has a sick wife. Holy fuck, is this a crossover?
Yeah, right.
But I don't know. It's doing a very good job of setting up things. Like, I love stories that dole information out slowly so that you're like, am I supposed to know what that is or who that person is?
Yeah.
And you don't get it right away. I like that. I know a lot of people...
Well, I definitely got Robert Johnson in there.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. But I don't know. I just... Overall, it you know what I liked about it? It feels like Vertigo.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, I think this is where Vertigo... I think DC has realized... You know, so... They kind of moved the old Vertigo into the new 52 at first with, like, Justice League Dark or whatever, and it worked for a little bit.
Constantine.
And it became watered down. And I think this is their version of, like, let's kind of try and recapture that audience.
Well, I mean, this is a Vertigo.
It is, but I'm saying, like, it's original Vertigo.
Yeah.
You know, Vertigo now is different. It's Hexwives, right?
Yeah.
And what's the other, Border Town?
Border Town, what's the one that's coming out that Robbie's doing? Goddess Mode, it's coming out soon.
That's But so I mean, you know, so that's what I liked about it. It felt like old school Vertigo, and I love old school Vertigo. But I also didn't know, like, it didn't feel like a rehash. So did you read this? I didn't read this.
I read that one. You
I
read
never
this
read
one?
The original series.
Why don't you? You want to talk about it a bit, Jordan?
I liked it a lot.
We don't have it over here.
We don't. Okay. Well, here. I super Passed duper on. Recommend it.
You super duper recommend it.
Super duper recommend it. I love it.
What'd you love about it?
Let me find it. Let's see. So it gets right to it. It doesn't waste your time. It grabbed me right away. I wasn't bored like I was bored in the beginning of Blackbird.
Okay.
The short-haired woman, her name is Dr. Rose. Love her. She said some shit. Let me see. Simple shit. Let's see. So he's all upset because he chose to be magical and because he's supposed to be like the best ever, whether he's good or
evil.
Yeah,
he's prophesized to be like
Tim Hunter, right?
Yeah, Tim Hunter, and he's super pissed off it's not working.
Not to be confused with Hunter the cop from...
or Harry Potter.
Well, and...
No, this character actually predates Harry Potter.
I know.
Absolutely. He looks a lot like him, but yeah, totally predates it. And so he's a pissy teenager. He's mad because he's like, I chose magic. And he's like, I'm not sure if it even matters whether I choose to be good or evil if I can't even do the magic I'm supposedly destined to do. And she said, and you thought because of your destiny that magic would come easily without learning or
That's
practice,
awesome.
Without cost? Yeah, I'm like, she made me, in my head, say the vine that I love so much. Step your pussies up. Own a business. So, I love her.
I love the fact that you were just like... Quoting a Vine?
Yeah.
Is that from Vine?
That's from Vine. So I love Dr. Rose.
To
she
me,
seems
Vine
like
is
a
like Bella Lugosi
bitch.
Off, you know, like, would you like some Vine? I never drink. Vine.
Yeah, no, she's awesome. She hands him a blank book and she says the words will appear to you when they're supposed to. And they sort of start doing that. And then he's a pissy teenager. And then they go away.
And then there's an ad for
The crimes of Harry Potter will be coming out.
Rub it in.
The interesting thing about, you know, obviously Tim Hunter predates Harry Potter by quite a bit. And there was a point, I don't remember, this is, you know, at least 10 years ago, somebody said something to Neil Gaiman, like, on record in an interview, like, why don't you sue
J.K.
Rowling? And he's like, who cares?
Yeah, she...
I thought it was really cool, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and obviously that's an influence on Harry Potter.
Well, did she read it? I have no idea.
I don't know,
that.
But I mean, I feel like it has to be.
It's possible, but at the same time, like, if you're like, oh, I want to make a wizard character, well, then obviously there's a society of wizards. You know, it's just...
Well, I mean, I don't even know about, like, the society or any of the architecture of the magic, but just the character. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah, they look the
but
same.
But it is possible. I mean, you know, that does
happen.
They
both end up with, like, pet owls.
Oh, do they?
Which is a thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Shit.
Yeah. Well, that's a little specific. I was going to say, if it's just some white dude with glasses, you know, yeah. I mean, come on.
Because people have tried to sue JK before, being like, oh, this is way too similar to my stuff. And as far as I know, they've all lost. I'm only aware of the one anyway.
Huh.
Let me see. They also go on to say things about...
But yeah, that's a good attitude to have, and I think a lot of people should have that attitude, unless it's blatant just plagiarism.
I thought it was really cool. No, I mean, he's, you know.
Yeah, that's all I can really find.
Any questions from the audience out there tonight?
I love when he throws it out to the audience. It's great.
No, nothing?
So here, I have a question. I'm not in the audience, but I have a question. Does anybody know, like, now Chris had references. So Books of Magic seems like the one where it's like a reboot, because Tim Hunter would be, like, Lucifer and all the Sandman stuff, it's clearly, like, down the road from the original series.
Well, this is, but it isn't, because even in the first few issues, or the first few pages, I mean, like, they actually show little panels and they reference, too, some of the original series in here.
Oh, there's Constantine, yeah. Okay, so, I mean, I'm just curious how it's, if he's younger again, how it's not a reboot, but, I mean, having not read the original series, I guess I'm kind of shit out of luck.
I mean, for me, somebody can explain for it. Me, it almost just seems like it's, you know, like a different kind of dimension. You know, there's even a line in here that says, you know, once upon a time there lived a boy named Timothy Hunter. He seemed like a very usual sort of boy, except there was one thing that was not usual. And so they took him across time and into danger, through doors between worlds, and to the very end. So that's kind of giving you the idea of everything that happens in the original. He's kind of asking, what's happening now?
So it's starting again.
The most powerful magician, the ender of the universe, a force for good or evil, chose magic, chose safety, chose Tim. And then it kind of cuts to him. Tim Hunter! And he wakes up. I choose magic. I choose magic, and he's sitting there in class. So yeah. So I mean, it almost seems like it is a continuation slash like a soft reboot, I guess, in a sense.
Oh my God!
What?
Sam Keith, Batman the Max. I'm reading a lot of Batman right now.
Them ears though.
Ever since he showed his pecker, dude, you were on board.
Oh wait, let's just talk about that shit right now. Let's talk about that shit right now. Okay. So, I was waiting for Batman Damned simply based on the comic shop news article that said, oh, it's this dark story. Who writes it?
Brian Azzarello.
Yeah, Azzarello. Yeah. And I forget who the artist is, but he's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And it's Batman and Constantine. And I'm like, I'm always down, you know, okay, awesome. And then I come here, the day it comes out, and it's magazine size. I was like, oh my God, I should buy multiples of these. And you had like hundreds of copies. They were like hanging from the fucking ceiling and shit. And I bought one copy. I went home and I read it. I'm like, this is fucking amazing. And then he texts me. This is great. I'm just going to go full out with this. He's like, hey, did Mike put that in your poll? I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, he didn't put it in mine. I'm like, well, dude, they had like 500 copies. He's like, no, they have none now, and it's going for, like, you know, $150. And I'm like, why? Wait, what? And he's like, well, the controversy.
Yeah.
I'm like, what controversy? He's like, Batman's Johnson.
Yep, the Bruce Wang.
Yeah, Bruce Wang.
Wait, is there a wiener in
there? The Battle Wang in there.
Show me right now.
There's a,
we don't, I, no, no, I, no, no, I, no, we, I, didn't, I, we didn't bring it in.
It's a $150 book. I'm not bringing it back here.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. It's listed on...
I put it in your pool.
It's listed...
Oh,
what am I, chopped liver?
Well, Chris, you cannot text me at like Friday night at 2 in the morning. Hey, can you get me that back?
No, it wasn't.
I'm not gonna remember it, come Wednesday.
This was when it first got announced.
Yes.
I send you a screenshot of it, and I'm like, can you add us to my thing? And I clearly remember it was daylight out, my friend.
I sent him a reminder, because I was like,
you got it though, right?
I.
Chris?
Yes, I did. Yes, okay, I eventually it got it.
Yeah. Mike did it.
For $85 on eBay.
No, really? I got it.
Fuck no.
But it's fucking awesome.
His penis?
It was so-so.
But, I mean, it seems standard.
His penis is fucking awesome. God, no. Wow. I mean, you see how they got Morgan Freeman to play his penis? I mean, it took me out of it a little bit, because I was like, it's Morgan Freeman, but I mean, I guess.
There you go, Jordan. That's the first appearance of Batman's penis.
Overhyped.
Thank you. I didn't even see it the first time I read the book. I'm like, what?
See, that's how overhyped it was.
How was there a...
So you think he's compensating for something when he puts on the big ears.
I guess so.
The taller the ears get.
Is he... This isn't erect at all, is it?
Well, he's getting out of the fucking Batmobile.
Then he's not erect.
Hey, that is bullshit.
Well, hey,
if you were in the Batmobile,
month, so,
you'd be like...
Let's hope.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just downloaded this to yours.
Thanks.
Now that's going
to the cloud. Now, the funny thing is, too, with that is part of that controversy was that they were up in arms over it. I don't know who the fuck was who made a big deal out of it. But then DC, huh?
Christians.
Fucking Christians, dude.
Christians.
Ruining all the good shit. So DC basically said, okay, well, here's what we're doing. We're going to censor it for all the digital releases, you know. So the only way you can see it is if you get the physical copy. And then later on, they said, okay, well, you know what? All from now on, all physical reprints are going to be censored as well. And then they eventually said, okay, you know what? We're not even just going to reprint it at all.
They're going to do it as a trade, and they're going to.
So the lesson is,
I mean, it's not really essential to the story. The penis isn't.
Not at all. Not in any way, shape, or form. It's barely
it
even
is.
There.
And what shape is that, Sean?
It's I walked into that one for sure.
That's what she said.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's like he's in a dark room. It's barely even there. It's barely. It's not like he's standing there like the beginning of what's the movie with
the penis?
No. Yeah, where he uncrosses his legs. No. Forgetting Sarah Marshall. You know, that was like one of the first. Like, I remember somebody's like, "My God!" It's like, you know, full frontal.
Jason Siegel.
Yeah, like it's not like that. It's like he's in the darkness, and there's like the outline and whatever. Okay, God, I'm explaining
this. Raises a good point.
What's that?
Sex equality, at least. LOL. Yay, gender equality. Caps lock. LOL.
Yeah. Hey, what?
Yeah.
And you know the funny thing is too is like earlier on, was it this year, last year? You know, there was an issue of Wonder Woman, you know, where that shows her, where it's the first appearance of...
Camel
know,
toe?
Wonder Woman's nipple.
Oh, okay.
You know, she pulls her thing down to breastfeed a kid, you know, and there's a panel where...
Wait,
she
how's
has her
Wonder Woman
breastfeeding?
Huh? Yeah.
Is she lactating?
Because she's Wonder Woman, she can fucking do anything,
that's,
I don't know.
That's sort of weird. That's sort of weird. Batman's just naked, then it's not a random woman suckling a random baby that's not
like,
hers.
She has to be pregnant, dude. I will point out, like, my friend Penguino.
Whatever the fuck.
She's been on the show, yeah. So after the Bat Dick controversy broke out, she texted me to hold a copy. And she's like, by the way, am I the first girl that's asked for it? And I'm like, actually,
yes.
You are.
Yep. I knew the answer to that question was yes.
Yes. So anyway.
I'd be fine seeing her boobies under normal circumstances, but not...
You can't breastfeed
lactating.
Unless you're pregnant.
You can't rando-lactate.
You can't just rando-lactate. Did you just make a word up?
I don't think so.
You can't rando-lactate. Maybe. Ain't no rando-lactating in here.
So...
Science says, pal.
Sam Keith is doing Batman and the Max, and I'm less interested in the Batman element. I'm more interested in the Max element because I love the Max. And you know, I mean, Sam Keith's art is, especially when applied to Batman, it's a little ridiculous. But I'm a huge fan of the original series. I was introduced to it through MTV. I forget what the
liquid,
show was.
Liquid Television.
And it wasn't Liquid Television. It was Oddities.
It wasn't?
It was MTV
was
Oddities.
It?
They had a thing called
what
The
was
Head.
Liquid Television, then?
That was like Ian Flux and whatnot.
Oh.
So they had a thing called Oddities. They did The Head. And then...
The Head.
Then they did The Max.
Holy
shit. So that's how I got into The Max. And so it's a story of, you know, the big purple guy, The Max, and Julie Winters. And there's a supporting cast, this girl, Sarah, who's younger, whose mother is friends with Julie. And... It's a really weird book. The villain's Mr. Gone, and about issue 20, I think the cartoon was like the first like 10 or 12, and then you keep reading it, and issue 20, Julie moves, and the Max is like really freaked out, and then the next issue, it's just not about the same people, and the Max is no longer in the book, and... It moved on, and it was just really strange, and it got even better, I thought. But I always wondered, like, wow, what happened to Max and Julie? And I think this is actually continuing the story.
Huh.
And it's interesting that, like, he's really smart, Sam Keith, the way he's doing it. Like, the Max is picked up and they don't know what to do with him, so they bring him to Arkham. And then he gets kind of under, like, there's, you know, some, like, nefarious doctor who's going to do some weird shit and, you
because
know, blah,
of course.
Blah, blah.
It's I say I love the nose cutout for the panel.
Yeah, totally. But it's just, I don't know, I'm just glad to see the Max back. I really, really like it. It's cool. So, all right, who else?
There we have it.
What do you got going on, Mike? You got anything going on?
I got nothing going on. I talked about everything you guys had going on.
No. But, I mean, you can talk about ones we haven't read yet. You're talking about a Silver Surfer that was pretty
interesting. Yeah, I did read this. This was fun. But I really don't have much to say about it. It's just a really cool story.
Is it a number one?
It's an annual.
Okay.
There's not currently a Silver Surfer series going on. But he goes
to this
planet.
It looks very cinematic.
Yeah, check it out.
It seems incredibly old school to me.
Nah, it has a nice twist.
Old school from way back in 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah, God.
It's got a little bit of a Mobius touch to it, I think.
Definitely.
And, but yeah, so he rescues a planet, or maybe he doesn't. And then, you know, his job is to find Galactus planets to eat. And there's a little twist at the end, so yeah.
That looks cool.
Yeah. Not very deep thoughts there. Just,
no, that's okay.
You know, it's cool.
I want to give two
I just want to see the twist.
Quick things, and then I guess we'll cut it.
Sure.
We're going to have, in January, I think DJ Kirkbride's going to be back on the show. He's got a new book called Errand Boys that I fucking love.
Cool,
like, I haven't read the second issue yet. But it's just really cool, weird sci-fi. There's like a Firefly element, I guess, in that the main character is like an errand boy, but it seems like he steals things, and that's like what that's what that means, like errand boys or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just really, really liked it. I cannot say his artist's name still. I still can't say. It's the same
artist.
I believe.
No, it's a new artist.
It is a new artist. Okay, well, so DJ, you picked two artists I can't pronounce. That's okay.
Kotsis?
I had trouble pronouncing Chris at first. You know, I mean, it took me like 6 months. No, it was.
Kotsis.
So there's that.
Kotsis? Kotsis.
This, I didn't know was coming out, and I was really surprised. In 2014, Cullen Bunn had a series called The Empty Man that I really liked. It was about a disease that might be God, that might be like an invasion, that was just really wreaking havoc with the population. People would see things, like horrific things, and it would make them change the way that they did things, and then they would do terrible things to themselves or to one another, to their families, and they would say, the empty man made me do it. And it basically followed partners. It was a FBI agent and a CDC agent that were paired to investigate this. And it's just really weird and like body horror and kind of fucked up. And it ends in this way where it's like one of the CDC guy goes into this weird like other world where you have to access it through this woman's, like, this woman had been skinned alive and they had found her skin like draped up. And so the whole series, they're looking for these two children. It was this woman's children, right? So they go to this crime scene. The husband's dead. The woman's dead. The children are missing. The woman's skin is draped up like this tent, right? It's been taken off her body. And what they find out in the last issue of the miniseries is that's the doorway. So they go to the fucking coroner. They pull the fucking skin out and they tack it up and open it. And then the CDC guy goes, I'm going to go in. Because he's also dying of cancer, you learn. So he's like, I got nothing to lose. I'm going to go and try and find him. He goes in. And then the fucking, it ends. And I'm like, wait, that was issue 6 of 6? Okay, so there'll be something.
So it's almost like Cronenberg's being John Malkovich.
Yeah. Yep. So
now I really want to see that movie.
Yeah, how about it? So then, like, there was nothing. And I never heard anything about it again. And then I just
happened to... This is the original?
No, this is the original. So then I just happened to look the other day at... I go to this... every Tuesday at work, I go, new comic books coming out this week, and it takes me to a website called, like, Comic List or something. And I saw The Empty Man, and I'm like, wait, what? Ongoing series. So it came back, and it picks up with totally different people. The outbreak or whatever the fuck it is has escalated so that the world is really fucked up. And then at the very end, you catch up with, like, the Fed. So you see the Fed, and she's now partnered with this guy that had been doing autopsies and, like, helping them with the case. We don't know where the guy that went into the skin is, though. So, but it's
He's in John Malkovich.
He is. Right, he is. It's really great, though. I know, it's cool.
So this is the new one.
This is the new one. And this is, I think, the Temple Smith cover. Boom is doing it, which is good for Boom, because I feel like Boom, like, had a really good run, and then they kind of, like,
is it the same team? Obviously, it's same not. Writer,
it's,
different
it's
artist.
It's the same writer. It's a different artist. It's Cullen Bunn, and the new artist is
Jesus
Hervás.
Hervás.
And the original artist was Vanessa R. Del Rey. So it's...
And how do the two compare? It looks like the same cover artist.
I think this is the... She's doing some of the covers for this, Vanessa R. Del Rey. It's a similar art style. It's not my favorite art style. Like, I feel like there's, like, some moments where I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at until they later explain it to me. But still, it gets it across, and it's just, it's creepy, man. It's really creepy. I think we'll wrap it. So, Kristen, The Empties Kickstarter, go to horrorcomic.com.
Horrorcomicbook.com.
And support it and read it, and it's awesome. And
thanks.
Have a safe journey.
Yeah,
to Michigan.
Michigan.
Stay warm.
Oh, goodness. I'll try.
You'll be warm. She will not.
Your fiance will be here when you get back.
Yes. Enjoying the weather.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys for tuning in and for tuning out, for coming down. And
thank you.
Joe Baxter, thank you
dude.
Again for the
much
legacy
love,
that
my
you've
friend, much love.
Helped start. And we're out. Good time in New York, man. Yes.